Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
I'm Steve Azar, and I'm on the other side of the microphone, meaning I'm asking the questions this time, and oh, have mercy for the airwaves. I spent 20 years in Music City, wrote and made some hits, traveled the world, and then moved my family back to the birthplace of American music and where the magnolia trees prosper. And now every time I put my feet on Mississippi soil, when I'm off the road, well, I'm at peace. On this show, it's all about hearing the story straight from the mouths of the friends I've made along the way, their journey to success. Heck, there might be someone on, I don't even know, but you know how us Mississippi types are. We tend to take well to new company. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them. I'm Steve Azar.
It's just like that muddy river, moving slow. Ain't no worries, it's how life goes, baby. In a Mississippi Minute. That's right.
Welcome to the Mississippi Minute. Folks, don't forget, as we get started today, so many wonderful things to do right here in Mississippi. Go to visitmississippi.org to find out a whole lot more. Today's guests I met many moons ago while serving my time in Music City, the founders of Kid Pan Alley. Their mission is to inspire creativity. You know, I dig that. Build confidence and foster community among children of all ages through the group songwriting process. Kid Pan Alley was founded in 1999 and since has written over 2,700 songs with 65,000 children. One of those, me. I mean, I wasn't the child, but I was with the children across the country from Virginia to Hawaii. Guest number one, curtain number one, I guess. The founder and artistic director is a composer, songwriter, recording artist, performer, and teacher. And I only give certain guitar players this incredible statute, and that is easy chord. That's what I call him. He can play anything. Guest number two, curtain number two, is a grants and education specialist. Her passion for singing led to earning a bachelor's and master's degree in music education. She's an avid music educator. It's her thing. And believes in the creative process, integrating voice, movement, improvisation, instrumentation as a means of inspiration and discovery. That's deep and heavy, but I get it, and you are about to too. You are about to as well. Let me get that right. You can check them out and their mission at www.kidpanalley.org. So let's welcome in to the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio, all the way from here to Virginia, the musical duo of Paul Reisler and Cheryl Toth. Hey, guys.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Hi, Steve.
What's up? What's up? You guys okay?
Well, we're doing well, and we sure enjoyed doing that concert with you last weekend. You were fabulous.
Well, you guys were fabulous, and it was great to reunite. It's been a long time just getting your email. I got excited just to reminisce about old times, and all of a sudden we did a little virtual concert, and it was just wonderful. And wow, man, just the music that night was just spectacular. I mean, it was just a great vibe, and folks, you know, I remember the one lady had a glass of wine with her, just watching her drink her wine while we played. And, you know, it's gotten so odd, hadn't it? You know, would we have ever thought that we would be doing all these virtual things online a year ago?
No, definitely not. You know, it's I think we come to concerts for a variety of reasons, but one of the main ones is community. And community has been one of the things that has really, really suffered during this virus time. You know, we happen to live in a real community. It's a very small one. Our whole county has 6,500 people, and the largest town is 124. But it is, in the truest sense of the word, a community where everyone knows each other. And, most of the people help each other out a lot. Because it's small enough that you do get to know everybody.
Right.
And with having to be separated from each other, I think there's been a real hunger for that kind of community.
Right.
I've been amazed how well doing a virtual concert like we did with you last weekend has worked for bringing people together. And I think part of it is, you know, we have the audience in the Zoom living room, and so we're looking at them, they're looking at us, they're asking us questions, and it really feels like we're sitting around the living room you know, having a glass of wine, although everybody's wine is a different flavor.
Right, right. You know, you know, the like the NBA figured out they had all the people zoom in their seats, you know? I mean, it was crazy to see it. And then they pipe in the crowd noise and do all this. But I felt like, you know, how creative has everybody, especially in the media, have to get? And at home with work. I had a friend the other day that said he was on 5 Zoom calls. Well, I did 4 yesterday, and that was my record. But it's just crazy where we are. Now, okay, so first of all, Paul, if you guys can move the speakerphone a little bit closer. I just want to make sure our guests get to hear everything. Okay. And then, so I want to start, Cheryl, with you. Take me back to your growing up years. You know, when did music sort of find you? And when did you go, this is it?
Well, music and art have always been a really important part of my life. My father's an artist, and my mother has always loved music. And so the two combined, I think, have always been an inspiration. My mother tells me my most embarrassing moment was when I was like 3 years old and my grandmother gave me a quarter to go out and dance and sing at this outdoor festival. You know, they had music playing. And boy, I went out there and just cut a rug and sang like my heart, you know, depended on it. So I think that it's just something that is in me. But I've always loved children, and going through school, I was really a fine arts major. I took art and all the courses that I could possibly participate in, and then went ahead and got my degrees in music education. But I think my real passion came when I started working in the music classroom with children with special needs.
Oh, wow.
And I realized, you know, these kids have songs in them.
Yeah.
They may not be able to speak or share their ideas, but they take it all in, and they feel things, and they have their own ideas about how they want to see the world. And so I really developed a passion for children with special learning disabilities, and especially autism.
Right. You know, our foundation, Cheryl, part of, you know, we donate to different causes that have their own programs. So we don't have programs within our deal. We donate to those and to the swimming beneficiaries. But one of them is Camp Looking Glass, which is, you know, children of different levels of autism. And I promise you this, seeing them sing and how what music does to them, you can feel it leave from the ground up, you know, all the way through their head. You know what I mean? Like, it's
absolutely
this wonderful, glorious explosion of love.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It's just so amazing. And I think for so many years we've underestimated the ability for children who have multiple disabilities, or who are nonverbal, to be able to communicate and be creative and be artistic.
Right. You know,
so,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So I moved away from the music classroom because I really felt that leadership was an opportunity in my path. And so I became an elementary school principal, which is where I met Paul.
Huh.
My PTA hired the nonprofit organization, Kid Pen Alley, to come in and work with my fourth and fifth grade students. And it was October 31st, Halloween. As you can imagine, kids were just so excited to be going trick-or-treat and doing all that fun stuff. And Paul wheeled in his big music cart that had all of his equipment. And for the next week, my fourth and fifth graders were just absolutely amazed and engaged. And, you know, I've worked in a school where I had a lot of students that were, English was their second language.
Right.
And so kids who had never raised their hand in class all of a sudden were raising their hand or leaning over to their friend and saying, share this idea. And it was just amazing to see what they were able to create. And so I got the idea for the second year to invite Paul and Kid Pen Alley to come up and work with my our sister school, which was right down the road. It's a school that is a K through 12 for students with multiple disabilities, not just autism, but kids who have a lot of medical interventions in their lives. And so Paul brought his amazing talents, and we paired my fourth graders with students from Key School in Fairfax County. Mm-hmm. And together, they wrote songs.
Yeah.
And they're just, as a matter of fact, the song that you hear on our online virtual concert, Life is Good Because We Have Music, was written by this combination of kids.
Yeah. I've been there and done this as well down here in the Delta Music Institute. We have a little music mobile lab, and we'll go to all sorts of places, from third graders, you know, to kids that have been in trouble a little bit, and, mm-hmm. and everywhere in between. And I'm telling you guys, it's amazing how music just sort of it fixes it all. I'm trying to find some sort of cool word to say, but that's what it does. It fixes it all. We're going to take a quick break. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio with Paul Reisler, Cheryl Toth. KidPanAlley.org is where you go to find out a whole lot more about them. Go to visitmississippi.org to find out what you're going to do this weekend. So many great things to do. I'm Steve Azar. You're in a Mississippi Minute.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Be yourself, not just somebody else, not just another book on the shelf. You can be your own boss.
Steve Azar, you're in a Mississippi Minute. We're rolling with my man Paul Reisler and Cheryl Toth. KidPanAlley.org is where you can hunt them down. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Visit Mississippi.org is the place to check out. Go check out the blues trails this weekend, the country music trail markers. So many cool things you can do and partake in our wonderful culture down here. Paul, I want to dig into your past a little bit. Before you meet Cheryl, from thank goodness to the PTA, and it may not have been the Harper Valley PTA, but it was a PTA that's the connection for you that made it happen. Let's
that's
talk.
Right.
Usually PTA screwed things up. You know, sometimes I may be in trouble for saying that, but no, I'm kidding. But take me down. You're just growing up. Obviously, your guitar playing is insane. It's incredible. It's special. You can tell you had a lot of training and you spent a lot of time locked up in your room. So take me back to the beginning, Paul.
Well, I came from a totally non-musical household. No one in any relatives or family ever played music, but I was bitten by the folk music bug in the early 60s, and I started playing guitar, and then when I was about 15 or 16, I started working at the Alexandria Folklore Center, which was, at that point, it was about the mid-60s, and it was one of the, there was the New York Folklore Center, Denver, and this one in Alexandria, Virginia, mm-hmm. and I met all kinds of people at my young age there. You know, we put on concerts, we had, you know, Bill Monroe, met people like Joan Baez, and it was just an incredible experience. Some old blues players, and just people would come in the store, play some music, and that was really set me on this path in my life. I learned how to build instruments back during that time, and
wow.
My first career was as an instrument maker. But when I was 25, another friend of mine who was an instrument maker and I and our two apprentices decided we were going to build a family of hammer dulcimers from bass up to soprano, and we did that. And at our very first gig doing that, we got a record contract in 1975. Mm-hmm. And it sort of took off from there. We named the band Trapezoid after scratching our heads for many months trying to figure out a good name. And because that was the shape of the hammer dulcimer. And immediately we were touring all over the country. So eventually I dropped the instrument making and just focused on doing music.
Paul, how old were you when you got your first record deal?
25.
Okay, all right.
And so Trapezoid made a bunch of albums, and they lasted for almost 25 years. The highlights were the 80s. We were doing a couple hundred shows a year and traveling all over the place. As that was kind of cross-fading out, I was doing a lot of music with my late wife, Julie Portman, who was a a world-class theater director, playwright, and actress, and I was doing music for her plays, and we toured all over the country and the world with that. At the same time, I was doing some Trapezoid, and sort of towards the end of the Trapezoid years, I was asked by a friend of mine here in Rappahannock County, Virginia, if I would do an interdisciplinary workshop with her and a visual artist. She was a choreographer, and they asked me to do music, and we were going to work for 3 weeks in the public school here. There's only one elementary school in our county. There's about 500 kids total, and in that 3 weeks, I worked with every kid in the county, wrote about 60 songs. You know, when they asked me to do it, I said, no, I don't really want to go in there and teach the kids. You know, she'll be coming around the mountain, and
yeah.
Old McDonald had a farm.
Although we like it, but yeah.
Although we like it, I was much more interested in the creative process than the recreative thing of learning a song. And so I asked, can I write songs with them? I had no idea how it would turn out. And they said, sure. So first day I went in there with all these plans, and then about the first 10 minutes I threw them all out. And we wrote 6 songs the first day. And it just went from there. Some of the songs were good. A couple of them here and there were great. And some were just like you'd expect. But by the end of that 3 weeks, we had about 60 songs.
Wow.
And we did a big performance for the whole community. And after that, people kept asking me, I'd like a copy of this song, and I'd like a copy of that song. And I was not that interested in being a children's artist and learning, you know, playing all those songs and recording them. But I got this idea about 6 months later to get all the musicians in our county together and have them each do a song in their own style.
Hmm. And from these songs that the kids wrote?
60 songs we wrote.
The songs these musicians are doing are actually these songs you guys wrote in this short window of time.
That's exactly right. So we picked up 19 of the songs and gave one to each artist, or we gave them a couple of songs to choose from that would fit with the style that they did. And we had everything from, you know, a hip-hop group to the sons of the conductor, Lauren Mazel, who was, you know, the foremost conductor in the world when he passed, where we did something where we put beats behind kind of a classical song. We had another neighbor of mine is John Bourgeois, who's the conductor of the Marine Band for 20 years. And he did an arrangement that we got the high school band to play and then paired them with a band called Everything, which was at the time a very popular rock band. And it was just a potpourri of all kinds of different music. And that's really what got us going. The album came out the week before 9/11 and was promptly buried under the rubble of that.
Right, right.
But my dear friend Beth Nielsen Chapman introduced me to Paul Gamble, the conductor of the Nashville Chamber Orchestra. She introduced me because I'd just written a full-length piece for orchestra and narrator, and she thought they might be interested in that. But what Paul was really interested in was doing another Kid Pan Alley project. And so within about 15 minutes, we were making an album with the Nashville Chamber Orchestra. Now, in Nashville, it seems, you know, as the saying goes, Coles to Newcastle. For me to be the only songwriter on a project like that was ludicrous, so I enlisted all my great songwriting friends there, many who've won multiple Grammys.
Right.
And they each went into a different school and wrote a couple of songs in each of the different schools, and we worked in all of the schools in Nashville. And then we recorded the songs. We did orchestral arrangements of a bunch of them that were appropriate for it. And we got a lot of great artists on there. We had Amy Grant and Delbert McClinton and Kix Brooks and Susie Boggess and the whole list of people, and accompanied by some of the greatest session players in Nashville and the Nashville Chamber Orchestra. And that album, which was called Kid Pan Alley Nashville, we got a Grammy nomination for one of the songs on it even. And that's sort of what set us, really set things in a high gear.
Paul, first of all, it takes an extreme amount of closure, the energy to close. Okay, so you can drive down the field, you have these ideas, but I'm listening to you tell me about all the songs you wrote, 60 songs in this small window, right? Which take you 2 years to write 60 songs. And you go in there, apparently you're like a ball of fire, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a great ball of fire, Jerry Lee, that's for you. Goodness gracious. But to close and to do put all of these elements together, have you always been like a walking spreadsheet?
You know what I'm saying? You gotta put the ball in the end zone, man. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing that separates everybody has great ideas, and the thing that sets apart a professional creator from just someone who's just doing it is that they actually finish things.
Right.
And so early on, I learned to finish things and drive them there. And a lot of the Kid Pan Alley thing was realizing that we had very limited amounts of time. In the first Kid Pan Alley project, I wrote all the songs basically in one sitting with the kids. And now we do it. We have 2 one-hour sessions. But we've written 2,700 songs, and none of them took over 2 hours.
Yeah.
So you learn how to kind of move more quickly through it.
Right.
The great thing about working with 25 kids at a time or 20 kids, however many, is that you never run out of ideas. And so there's always something popping up, whereas if you're sitting there by yourself or with another friend, you can hit the wall, but kids don't hit the wall. They have the ideas just keep flowing. And my job is to, keep it between the white lines there, but let it wander where it's going to go.
Yeah,
I'd say I try and do as little as necessary, as little as possible, and as much as necessary.
Right.
So I'm guiding, but I'm trying to get it all from the kid, including not only the lyric, but the melody. So after we write a section of lyric, I work with them. We clap. Someone will read the first line. We'll clap the rhythm so that they can see the natural rhythm of what we've written, and then I'll have someone else say it, and I'll show them with my hand the relative pitch of what they're saying. So because popular music is very much informed by the natural pitch and rhythm of speech, melody is expanded rhythm as expanded speech, and speech is compressed melody. That is, we speak in a narrower range than we sing. We might hold out a word longer and music or in a melody, but in essence, it should sound conversational.
Absolutely. And sing it like you say it. You guys get to play DJ first. We are the birthplace of American music in Mississippi. So you get to play DJ. Would you like to hear in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio Mac McAnally or Marty Stewart? Which one would you like to hear?
Oh, Mac McAnally.
We love them both. Yep. We love them both. That's a hard choice. We're a little Mac McAnally. You're in Mississippi Minute. I'm Steve Azar. We're going to be right back with Paul Reisler and Cheryl Toth, Kid Pan Alley. Don't go nowhere.
That's where I come from, where I'll be when it's said and done. And I'm proud as anyone, that's where I come from. Back where I come from, I'm an old Mississippian.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
When the lights go out, you've got to be brave, and in the storm when...
Visit Mississippi.org. Everybody Google it right now. Don't Google it. Go to the website, but you can Google it. The bottom line is you're going to find out so many amazing things. You had no clue that we're here on our sacred hallowed ground in Mississippi. Tell them I sent you. I'm Steve Azar. You're in a Mississippi Minute in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. How many times can I say Mississippi? Just don't even start counting, because it never ends. Because I love the way it rolls off my tongue and how it inspires me. I'm with Paul Reisler, Cheryl Toth, and of the Kid Pan Alley. Go to kidpanalley.org as well. So much of what they do, it rolls, it just sort of has a lot to do who we are as well. I want to understand, guys, where does the name Kid Pan Alley come from? Is Kid Pan Alley already in business when you guys meet as well, Cheryl?
No, actually, Cheryl just stepped out for a second. She'll be
Cheryl's
right
not allowed to leave the interview. Where'd she go?
Oh, she's
getting coffee?
She's coming right back.
All right, Paul, so you tell me.
Okay, so yes, it was, when we made the first album, we were searching around for a name, and it wasn't like it came up right away, but eventually I was thinking, well, here I am, Kid Pan Alley is really named after Tin Pan Alley, and Tin Pan Alley is where most of the Great American Songbook was written. There was a place called the Brill Building in New York City where all of the publishers had their offices, and the songwriters would go in every morning at 9 o'clock and write songs from 9 to 5, and they'd be banging on these Avatune pianos, So if you were walking down the alley behind the Brill Building, it sounded, they said it sounded like people beating on tin pans, and so they called it Tin Pan Alley.
Wow, yeah.
But that's where all these great songs, the Gershwins, Irving Berlin, all the way up through Carole King, and people like that wrote their songs. And so that seemed really appropriate, because we were going in and spending the day writing songs, being in the creative space of doing that. And also there's the cacophony of it that you heard behind the Brill Building, because a lot of times the kids get so excited they're all shouting out at once. And so it sounds, it has that kind of creative energy that you would hear behind the Brill Building.
So all this starts basically by getting asked to do something when your band's been rolling and it's just sort of reaching its conclusion, right? Would you have ever thought, Paul, that, I mean, how many years have you been doing Kid Pan Alley?
21.
Are you kidding me? Has it been that long? So I came along at the beginning. We did with Mitch, our buddy Mitch, he was a great, great, great film producer, television producer, producer of all kind. I respect this man so much. When did we do a TV pilot? Is that what we did?
Yeah, we did a TV pilot in about 94, 95. I mean, 2004, 2005.
Yeah, it was after.
It was about 5 or so years into Kid Pan Alley. And Mitch had this great idea that would make fascinating TV to watch us write songs with the kids, and for me to have to work with different artists who were great songwriters such as yourself, and you were the pilot. You were in a pilot program on that.
Did we get
and
shot down since I was the
pilot? Working with you.
I wonder if I got shot down. I guess I did. We didn't.
No.
Work. What happened?
you know, it just. I don't know. Mitch was trying to pitch it, and it didn't really go anywhere. But I thought it was a great idea, and I remember we wrote a song about. I think it was called Summer School Blues or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I remember. That's exactly right. That's what it was called. I totally now I can see myself there. And doing the song, you just by the title. That's so interesting. We probably should have got Amy Grant to do it, and it would have worked. So if we have to go back and do things over, I would be the one going like, let's not use me, let's use Amy. But
I don't know. I think you're pretty great, but it never hurts to have someone like Amy Grant, or we've had so many great artists. We even had people like Sissy Spacek singing our songs.
So yeah, you love Sissy Spacek, so I love her too. But you Cheryl, is it a little uncomfortable at times how much he loves her?
No, you know, he loved working with Sissy Spacek, and it's kind of an ongoing joke, you know. Let's get Sissy in to sing, you know. he'll stay nice and focused.
I stand focused. You know, I've got a thing for Andie MacDowell, and my wife Gwen knows it. So it's just her hair. I mean, I love it. I love her hair. Anyway, there's something about the way she talks and all that. Or maybe I should stop right now before I get in trouble.
Before you get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good thing. Maybe I told Gwen. I said it's a good thing we probably never met. But no, it's not. Actually, I'm just messing around. The bottom line is, I get it. Okay, so. As you guys have sort of evolved, right? And have you ever hit like a wall during a time with your own energy level or with just things like obstacles along the way and challenges, not COVID, that's another deal. But somewhere in the middle, has there ever been a time when you both have gone, I think we've gone as far as we can, or is the dream still alive and you rolling?
Well, the dream is still alive. We did hit a really rough spot about 9 years ago, but the dream is still as strong as ever. And in fact, what I'm really working on now, and what we're working on as an organization, is it being sustainable past me. I'm 71 now, and while I still absolutely love doing this, it is really hard work. And I'm kind of looking ahead 4 or 5 years down the road, where I'm already starting to cut back a little bit, and other people are learning and taking over, because we think it's so important for the children to have the experience of being creators.
Right.
We live in a creative economy, they say, and yet we do very little to encourage the creativity of children, and very little to train them to be creators. So we think this is such an important thing for them. And then to have the kind of success they have, because they're writing really good songs. They're not, you know, silly little songs about their dog or their cat, but songs that people like Amy Grant might want to sing. And I tell you, you know, think about what would have happened for you, and I certainly think about what would have happened for me if the first song I wrote when I was 8 years old got recorded by Amy.
Yeah, that's right.
It would have changed my life.
It wouldn't have been fair. But, you know, the interesting part is, let me ask Cheryl about this, because as an educator, and you see the light bulb go off, the nurturing process, without it, right? Can you imagine the one thing that they seem to want to eliminate from public schools, you know, we've been told and we've witnessed, is the arts. We can't afford the arts, you know. Can you imagine someone growing up, everybody has to have it. It is like a part of the brain, heart, and soul that has to be fed. And when you feed that, I think it also helps people to become better human beings, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you think about our lives are permeated with music, art, the beauty that we see in the landscape. And for children, especially in school, having the arts there as a viable subject matter and also integrated into everything else that they're learning is so critical, because children learn in different ways, and they have different learning styles. And, you know, you have children that learn by drawing it out, by creating that visual imagery. You have other children who beat it out on their desks, the drummers of the future. You know, they find the rhythm in their learning. The arts are so integrated in everything we do, everything we see. I mean, I was, like I said, during our house concert, I had the opportunity sometime to watch your video on Waiting for Joe, and I was so moved. I mean, it evokes our emotions. It gives us a way to express ourselves.
And
I was moved to tears. And then, you know, I can listen to a song that will make me get up and dance around and be silly.
Well, that's what it does. It's everywhere in between, you know.
Absolutely.
And it fixes all the pain that you could. I mean, listening to the most sad song in your most down time,
so
it's whatever, two negatives make a positive. I've seen that work. You know,
it's
a songwriter, writing yourself out of that hole, from that dark, really hurtful place, and writing a song about hurt, right? I mean, it fixes everything. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me sometimes. All I know is that the cure for polio is polio. The cure for a songwriter that's struggling at times or whatever is writing a song. You know, it's just insane. We're going to take a quick break. You're in the Mississippi Minute. I'm with Paul Reisler, Cheryl Toth. KidPanAlley.org is how you go. Check out all the cool things they're doing. Visit Mississippi.org is how you go and check out all the cool cultural things. Come visit us down here at the Jim Henson Museum, for goodness sake. It's incredible. B.B. King Museum, the Grammy Museum. It's all like just right around the block from me and a short drive away from you. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. We'll be right back.
Sorrow can knock us down. When the hurricane's coming, we won't be running. This courage is what we found. When the lights go out, we gotta be brave. Oh, when the lights go out, we gotta be brave. When the lights go out, we've gotta be brave. I'm still trying to find my way.
Hey folks, Steve Azar here. My friends at Guaranty Bank are setting the standard in banking. Guaranty Bank is committed to excellence in financial services and their delivery to strengthen the communities they serve and help improve the quality of life for those all-important areas. So make your reservation today. Their doors are open. Just schedule your appointment and reserve your spot prior to visiting them at gbtonline.com. The entire team of Guaranty Bank are committed to serving you and keeping you and their staff safe during these unprecedented times. Guaranty Bank, member FDIC.
In a Mississippi Minute with Steve Azar, right here on Super Talk Mississippi.
The last star I see past the place
where the last. What has happened to the radio? The Super Talk Mississippi is still allowing me to do this. I'm so happy that they are that they've lost their minds with me. Along with, I appreciate them very much, my friends there. Thank you for tuning into In a Mississippi Minute. All you listeners, loyal listeners, I really appreciate it. Go to visitmississippi.org to find out so many cool things you can do. Come visit my country trail marker down here in Greenville, Mississippi, and just tell my buddies at Jim's Cafe where it sits that where actually, Cheryl, I actually did some of my Waiting on Joe video there, and that's where my country marker sits. I'm with Paul Reisler, Cheryl Toth, Kid Pan Alley. You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful studio. Guys, we're going to wrap this thing up in about 7 minutes. Let's talk about Paul, you're talking about transitioning out like you're going to retire or something. First of all, we're not allowing that. You play guitar like you did at 20. Actually, you play guitar like you do it at 71, which is better. But I can't imagine you ever putting the guitar up or putting the idea of not being creative up. Have you thought about like old number four Brett Favre just deciding I'm just not going to play football anymore?
Well, I'm not going to walk away just like Jim Brown, but I know I'm going to keep doing this. And what I'm thinking more as I get older is I started writing musicals about 7 or 8 years ago. And we have two Kid Pan Alley musicals now, one called Bouncin', which I wrote the script from scratch on, and then I work with the kids and I use some of my songs, but we wrote the songs for that. And then another one based on the Clementine series of children's books, which were written by a dear friend of mine. And this past year I wrote The Talented Clementine, and that's had two runs already based on that book. And what I did is I adapted the book for the musical, and then I would go into the schools. And the kids had already read the books. They had a read aloud. I'd go in and we'd take a section of the musical and I'd read it to them and then say, well, what can we do with a song to enhance this or maybe to replace the dialogue? And we would write songs for that. And so most of the songs were written with the children on it. And it's a fantastic piece. I was so fortunate to have my friend who wrote those books, because they are just some of the most delightful books about a third grader who learns in a very different kind of way and is somewhat distracted but thinks in her own way. Quite inspiring. So I think I'm going to do more musical writing, and I'll never stop doing Kid Pan Alley as long as I'm able. But the main thing, you know, in that 4 or 5 years ago, our board sat down and we all thought about it and said, okay, we can do this one of two ways. We can just play it out as long as Paul's able and then fold our tents and let it go. Or we can really start working on transition and training other people to do the work Paul's doing.
Hey, okay, so how do people get involved?
Well, one way is to help bring Kid Pan Alley to your local school, because we want to work with as many children as we can while we can. And so that's a really great way to do it. And it's also a way to support your own community and to get to give something back to the children in your community. Because as it's been said so many millions of times, the children are our future. So let's teach them how to be creative and to solve the problems going forward. We can also, Kid Pan Alley is a not-for-profit. We all know schools have very small budgets these days, and the budgets have been slashed. So another way of helping is to donate to Kid Pan Alley, which you can do on our website, kidpanalley.org. And another way is just to enjoy what we're doing, because as we mentioned early on, we have a Sunday night concert series that we started back in March. I realized that all my friends, all of their gigs had been canceled for the foreseeable future. And I thought, well, you know, how can we, the music's inside, it's all bottled up, and the music creates community, the music heals community. What can we do to uncork that bottle and let it spread out over the country? So we started this concert series that you were on last week. Yeah. We've had close to 25 concerts now, with a lot of amazing artists, people like, you know, Kathy Mattea and Tom Paxton, John McCutcheon.
And Steve Azar.
And Steve Azar.
You guys are fantastic.
Next week we have Pat Alger and John Besner.
Yeah, well, that's going to be boring, isn't it? That's going to be boring. Come on. They're such great songwriters, such great guys.
Yeah. And so, you know, you can come on Sunday nights and watch, and you can go to our website, and you'll find information on it there.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough. Everybody, check out kidpanalley.org and get involved. This is the real deal. My friends, Paul Reisler, Cheryl Toth, this is they take it personal, and it's a mission, and it's special. Go to visitmississippi.org. That's pretty dang special. Figure out what you're going to do this
sure
weekend.
Is.
Short drive away. We're driving state. I'm going to get Paul and Cheryl down into the Delta as soon as they get in their car and they say they're coming. I'm going to host them to some great food, great music,
we'll
great meals.
That.
You're in the Keep Mississippi Beautiful Studio.
I'm looking forward to hanging out with you in person sometime here.
It's been a while. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Blessings to you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
And the Mississippi Minute is no longer. We'll see you guys later. Stay safe.
I'm Steve Azar. In a Mississippi Minute, all 60 of them, where you can take your sweet time.
The news doesn't sleep, and neither do we. Fox News Radio. Late breaking, up to the minute, from around the world, around the clock, here on Super Talk Mississippi. Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.